Welcome to the Catalan Grand Prix, where a man headbutted a motorcycle at 150 miles an hour, and another one forgot how many laps were left. I'm not making any of this up. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. No, really. Both these things actually happened. I don't know how either, but here we are. Welcome to episode 370 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Good, thanks. Glad you could join us as ever. And this is a weird Grand Prix to talk about. We're talking about MotoGP's Grand Prix of Catalunya this past weekend. And I'll be real with you, people, because I'm honest with you as a listener base. This was not a particularly exciting Grand Prix. This was, in fact, as far as to say, if it was an F1 Catalunya race, you wouldn't probably be able to tell the difference. However,
this year's F1 race was more exciting.
Yeah, it probably was.
I thought you were about to go off about the guy who was saying that coleslaw is better, you're just not willing to admit you're an adult.
Whoa.
Not only that person isn't just wrong, they're wrong in red.
Yeah, they're wrong in every color under the rainbow.
You described it as fatherless behavior.
I did describe it as fatherless behavior, and I stand by this statement. Now, if you've been following me on Twitter at Harrison101HD, I may or may not have said to a random person on there to delete their account because they said that coleslaw was better than macaroni and cheese. The heretic. I'm running for president on a platform for the final solution of eradicating coleslaw. If you believe this to be the case, send me an email and any donations to patreon.com/motorsport101.
Now, Dre, you've been saying this for the past, almost 24 hours. Mm. You know what that's a reference to, right?
You know, I will say, as the resident Jewish person of this call, I fully support this.
Hang on. I don't know what this reference is to.
Oh, no.
Moving on.
Someone's got to tell us.
Facebook.com/motorsport101. Twitter at motorsport_101. Twitch.tv/motorsport101_. Our personal handles at Harris101HD, at RyanRKing, at RJ O'Connell, at CBuckley917.
And make sure you pick up a copy of Dre's book, which is not titled My Struggle.
this reference is going to kill me now for the rest of... I've just read the chat that we have in our studio, and say no more.
I can give you in this case, look at me. I'm giving someone else the pass.
We can't look at each other.
And I'm giving you the pass.
You can't turn the webcams on during recording. I want to talk about the Catalan Grand Prix. I got to catch up on a lot of things.
Good idea. This was a nothing burger of a sandwich where both buns were lit on fire. It's a very strange metaphor, I know, but work with me on this one. I promise you, we'll get to the bottom of this over the next 40 minutes or so, because, my God, it's exploded on social media since then. Alicia Spagaro was trending in the United Kingdom in a sport where only 200,000 people watch MotoGP every week.
That's a big sport.
Yeah. Oh boy. Let's get into the Catalan Grand Prix.
Buddy. Oh my goodness. I don't know how we're going to There's no easy transition out of that segment.
No. There's no transition. But God help me, I will try. God loves a trier. So, the big news coming out of Catalunya. Well, it started 10 seconds into this race. Long run down to turn one. Taka Nakagami maybe doesn't, goes into turn one too hot. He definitely goes in too hot.
It wasn't even borderline.
Yeah, he tucks the front of his bike completely in the heavy pack towards turn one. And we didn't even notice this at first. It was only until the slow motion replays and the multiple angles showed it that we were really just aghast in horror at what we'd just seen. but Taka Nakagami falls off in such a way that this head bounces off the rear tire of Francesco Bagnaia's bike.
He tore the visor off of his helmet.
Yeah, this is not an exaggeration. It was a clean headbutt to the tire. Rips the visor off. Obviously, the impact takes Bagnaia down, and Taka's bike collects Alex Rins. The three of them are all out at turn one. Somehow, Nakagami has had no major injuries. He's just been discharged from hospital yesterday at the time of recording, but he's fine. Somehow, he's fine. Arai Helmets inadvertently just got a hell of a plug. I'll say that much. Alex Rins wasn't so lucky. He unfortunately broke his left wrist as a result of this. He's now in a race against time to be fit for the German Grand Prix next weekend at the Sachsenring. That'll be touch and go because he had to miss the Catalan test that came the day afterwards as well. But again, he's fine besides that, thankfully. Bagnaia had no injuries at all. He was fine. And it sums it up quite well when Bagnaia in the post-race press conference describes it as, quote, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed.
that was the charitable side of things.
Yeah, and then there's Alex Rins.
He wasn't so charitable.
Rins was pissed. Not necessarily at Taka, per se. And let's not forget,
He was catching strays, because the main ammunition was being fired at the stewarding.
Yeah, like he was angry at Taka, but of course wished him obviously to make a full recovery. Yeah. Said that Taka was over the limit, but the real target of his frustration was at the stewards, especially after last week where they were caught up in an incident where Rins and Nakagami hit each other. It wasn't on camera, it was on CCTV. It had to be on the website if you wanted to see it, but Rins blamed Nakagami for that one too, even though you could make a case that was more of a recent incident. But here's what Rins had to say after the race, and Freddie Spencer, if you're listening, you might want to cover your ears. Quote, it's unacceptable. We cannot go on like this. The race direction, the stewards make zero sense in what they're saying. To say, quote, no further action about what happened in the race. For me, I already said to Freddie, as in Freddie Spencer, when I was there in Mugello, that in my opinion, they need to penalize with the same penalty as Onshu received last year. No, but it's crazy. For sure, and today they demonstrated it on TV that the stewards are not on the level of MotoGP. Now, for those guys who don't know, maybe you're a newer fan, when he refers to Dennis Onshu, he refers to the 2-race ban that he got at the Circuit of the Americas last year for that horrible weave that led to a massive 4-bike incident at 140 miles an hour there. Onshu was banned for 2 rounds as a result of that. That's what he's referring to, and that's what he thought was an appropriate punishment for Nakagami. Now, gentlemen, are the stewards out of line? Are they really this badly out of touch? How do you feel about it? Because this has been one of the most talked about vocal points post-race all over the internet. We've had podcasters and journalists scrapping it out on Twitter, you know, people defending Freddie Spencer's honor. It's been a rough week.
I'd say
that, you know, a lot of the motorsports we talk about that are not Formula One don't have the reach that Formula One does.
Of course not.
But, you know, MotoGP's stewarding controversies, inquiries about whether or not race stewards are fit for purpose, they are a lot more incendiary. Go ahead. Yep.
And I'd say, in terms of stewarding, especially motorcycle racing, it's one of the places where, yes, there can be racing incidents, but you can ride in a way that might not, you know, be obviously reckless, but to use the lexicon of another motorsport series we mentioned from time to time, you can be a moral hazard to your fellow competitors and yourself.
Mm. Cam, I'm letting the bottle off the cork. What have you got to say?
Oh, God. Why is the light on me?
Ask for it.
Man, I don't know where to even start with this. First of all, happy that everyone is relatively okay. Obviously, yeah. Rins is in a situation where we'll see if he's ready for the German Grand Prix next week. Taka wasn't even close to making we weren't even turning yet before he tucked the front.
Yeah.
He was way too deep, way too hard on the brakes, and he didn't even get to leaning the bike before he tipped it.
Yeah.
Not even close.
On one hand, you can have a racing incident. This is a bit more for me. This is riding in it's riding a way that's fundamentally unsafe. There's no, if he would have made the corner. No, because he didn't have a chance to.
Zero chance.
It was Busch League. It was something you'd see out of a Formula One open lobby. And I'll go to the point that was raised earlier today by those who will not be named. You can be great at playing in your sport. That doesn't mean you're good at managing your sport. Michael Jeffrey Jordan
is
the greatest basketball player who ever played the game. He's a shit owner. Freddie Spencer is one of the greatest motorcycle riders ever. I will stand by him.
The original alien.
The original alien. Extraordinary rider. No matter what you put him on, he was fast. He actually
would have had more championships if he hadn't got hurt so early in his career.
Yeah.
We can all agree on that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Actually, for a living, used to ride the motorcycle that I happen to own. Honda 750. He has been an abject failure as the head of race direction.
Yeah.
As the head of stewarding, I should say. It's far too one way or the other. It is either no room for interpretation, ultra heavy-handed penalties, or no further action, with seemingly nothing in between. If you touch the green on the outside of the track, no matter what the circumstance, you do it a couple times, you're just done. Penalty. Yet, you can ride in a way that is just unacceptably unsafe, and no further action. It needs to be... We need to be clearer on what merits scrutiny and what does not. Because it feels like everything that isn't what Anshu did last year or track limits is in this massive gray area. That's just not acceptable.
Yeah.
It's beneath the level of MotoGP, as Alex turns. This is the top flight of motorcycle racing on this planet, and as far as I know, every other planet. It's just not good enough, and it's been happening too often and for too long to not sit up and speak about it.
Yeah, because you can ignore travel calls in the NBA, but this is not the sport where you can boys have at it. There needs to be self-policing.
MotoGP is not a self-policing sport. We saw that happen once. A dude got kicked off his motorcycle.
Yeah, and that's why we don't have a points penalty point system in air anymore, because of the aftermath of that incident.
You know why we don't, RJ?
Yeah.
Because it worked.
Yeah.
Because it did its intended purpose, directly affected the championship battle. Not that Rossi would have won anyways. Fight me on it. and it was literally like it got to the point where it was a political situation between Italy and Spain.
Yeah, between little countries.
We had countries willing to take up arms against one another over that incident.
Yeah.
And it did its job. And for it doing its job, it was scrapped.
Yeah. I've kept quiet on this so far. I've largely not said very much on this matter. Here's what I will say. This sport has not gotten it right for 20 years. This is the culmination of years of, and literally decades of frustration regarding race direction and how to handle its talent. Because I'll tell you for free, 20 years ago, Taka gets a race ban for that incident. And I wouldn't blame them for giving them a race ban for it, because that was... I know MotoGP likes to put all of this in the vague category of irresponsible riding, which can range from anything from a long lap penalty to a pit lane start to a... Hell, remember when Jorge Navarro got black flagged for taking out Sam Lowe's last year? It's a messy system. And they've had multiple messy systems over the last 20 years. 20 years ago, they were probably a bit too harsh with it, where they were chucking out race bans like cotton candy.
We were seeing them for a lot less than what happened at Turn 1 on Sunday.
I still remember as a Gibbonau fan, he was taken out by Makoto Tomada at Motegi one year.
Yeah.
And Tomada was disqualified. Like, I'm just like, whoa, even I think that's a bit harsh. Like, it's been decades of them never being quite able to figure this out. The one system that I thought that had the potential for this to work, the penalty point system, was chucked out because the sport got scared it pissed off its biggest meal ticket. And that frustrates me. This reboot we've had now for the last, I think, 3 years now with Freddie Spencer as lead steward has been a mess. The communication has been poor. The consistency of penalties has been a joke. I've not even mentioned Moto 3 and how a complete dumpster fire that series has become in terms of officiating now, to the point where people asking for race bans actually have a point.
Yeah.
Because of how reckless and how poorly mismanaged it's been for a good half decade plus.
Because at a certain point, you need to remove the human element. Because people are fallible. People can be manipulated. People can feel sympathetic to people who've broken the rules. Like, it sucks to say, but sometimes competition is harsh and people need to be punished.
Yeah.
Well, to that effect, these are racing riders, just like racing drivers. They are paid to go and push the limit. And if you do not define where that limit is, they're going to keep going further and further until they're so far over the line that something awful happens.
Right.
Let me tell you something. When I saw, I was astounded that Taka Nakagami did not suffer a basal skull fracture and die in that crash.
Yep. Right.
Given the nature of how his neck moved, I'm astounded that he did not suffer a basal skull
fracture. I'm astounded he's basically fine.
Yeah.
He's probably going to ride next weekend. That is astonishing. If you saw the replay of what that was, it went viral for good reason. It was the most terrifying incident I've seen since Marco Simoncelli from 2011. I am not exaggerating in any way, shape, or form. He probably should have died in that incident. That helmet saved his life. I have no doubt in my mind about that. We've got to take away this unwritten rule where if somebody crashes out of nowhere and they take themselves out of a race and then take somebody else out with them, that means, well, they're out, so that's punishment enough. No! That was reckless riding from Taka Nakagami. It was reckless. It was dangerous. It endangered himself as well as his fellow competitor in an incredibly nasty scenario. He should have had the book thrown at him for that.
Yeah.
That's a pit lane start at the minimum for me.
Like, I talk about this when this stuff like this comes up in Formula One.
Hmm.
But for the most part, penalties across all sport fall into two categories. Reparative, which is usually meant for like minor infractions of the rules meant to, you know, cheat or game the system.
Sure.
You know, we know what that category is.
Track limits.
Yeah. And then the other category is punitive, for doing something that either puts the sport into disrepute or puts yourself or other competitors in severe danger. And it's meant to go far beyond reparative, you know, trying to correct a wrong. This is to punish you for doing something that is reprehensible.
Right. And this falls into that category, that second category, easily. And unfortunately, I could bring up another example. This very Grand Prix last year, Fabio Quartararo chucked out his chest protector in the middle of a race and was only given a 3-second time penalty for it.
Yeah, he was given a reparative penalty for something that shouldn't have been given a reparative penalty.
He should have been parked right there and then. Black and orange flag. Park him. Instead,
respect,
you let him continue.
The meatball.
Like, he was given a time penalty after the fact. He was allowed to continue without a vital piece of safety equipment. And Freddie Spencer just gave him a 3-second time penalty and another one for track limits. Do you know how stupid this sport looked when that happened last year? I was like, thank God more people don't watch us, otherwise you'd be so embarrassed.
Look at that there. they have a hardcore, like a no room for interpretation track limits, you know, ultra heavy handed penalty. Oh, by the way, you're riding without one of your most important safety components. That's fine.
It's batshit crazy. This entire system has failed. It has failed. It is not fit for purpose, and it does not work. It's been multiple incidents over the last 2, 3, 4 seasons with this new system in place where I have sat there baffled at what I've watched in and how I would love to see the decision-making process that it comes to. But again, we don't get that because the sport is terrible of communicating its punishments. Like, according to Freddie Spencer, he came out after the race and said afterwards that, oh, Nakagami didn't break that late compared to the rest of the field, and that was decision enough not to punish them, to which I say, bullshit! Like, because we could all see it with our own eyes. He was never going to make that corner in a month of Sundays.
Yeah. And he folded the front tire before he even thought about turning the front wheel.
And how far he chucked his bike up the field. Where did Nakagami start in the grid?
12th.
Yeah, and he was crashing around the leaders.
Yeah. He took out two dudes who were starting on the second row.
He went from 12th to 4th.
Yeah, because he went for the big old outside sweep that we see in MotoGP quite often, where one guy will ride the outside and take advantage of people that have to slow down in the middle. It's a classic starting tactic that can work. Rins did it beautifully in Portimao and gained about 10 spots for it. It can work, but
even then, he wasn't
near.
As late. He wasn't as late on the brakes as Taka was.
Yeah. Nowhere near. So, and again, that I bring up that point because it doesn't matter if he wasn't as late as on the brakes as the other riders around him. He was heading into turn one at a much higher speed than everyone else.
Yeah. Look, you doesn't matter how early or late you were on the brakes. Point is, you used your bike, ended up being a weapon that took out two other riders for your own mistake.
Yep.
That needs to be punished. That is a reckless incident, no matter which way you slice it. To say no further action is a spit in the face to someone like Alex Rins, who thankfully only had a minor injury.
Good question. What did Jorge Lorenzo get when he tucked the front of his Honda a couple years ago and took out a bunch of riders?
Nothing.
At least he was turning the fucking bike.
Yeah.
And he got buried, and we thought he should have deserved a penalty when that happened.
He got nothing, because that's the go-to. If you take yourself out, well, that's punishment enough. That's bullshit. That's got to change. You've got to stamp out that sort of riding. You've got to send a clear message that that is completely unacceptable. And the sport has failed to do that, and everybody now looks stupid. To the point where journalists are pointing fingers at each other saying, oh, well, look, this whole idea of because Freddie Spencer is a legend, he's above criticism is complete
bullshit. You will not meet a bigger Freddie Spencer fan than me. That man was extra fucking ordinary. And on some of my favorite motorcycles ever, that does not make him immune to criticism. Just not because you were good in the sport does not mean you were good at managing the sport. And vice versa.
No, but it means you're bad at your job for it too. And I'm sorry. Damn. And Dorna needs to readdress this immediately, because this what's going to happen is this will keep happening until something really bad happens. This was a lucky escape. We were probably inches away from, dare I say, another fatality in this sport.
I am still here, shocked that Taka Nakagami is still here today.
Yeah.
And same deal with Taka. I am a big Taka fan. That was unacceptable riding.
Completely. Completely. You know, like I said, 20 years ago, he gets a race ban for that incident. And honestly, if they had said after that race, you know what, sit Germany out, I wouldn't have blamed them at all. I'd have completely understood. Because I've seen incidents of similar violence and irresponsibility that have led to black flags and race bans. Like, I'm not 100% in agreement with Rins saying that it was a two-race ban punishment like Dennis Onshu did. It's in the ballpark.
And I'd say it's borderline, and the fact that we can say it's borderline at all,
that's enough.
Should tell you enough.
Yeah, that's enough for me. And yeah, look, this system is not fit for purpose. Dorna, it needs to change. This is not going to work until someone else gets really hurt. And I don't like when series are reactive rather than proactive. When the sports riders itself are basically sending you a vote of no confidence in the people that are meant to be managing them, something needs to change. It's that simple. Because if there's one thing I know about votes of no confidence, it says all the messages you need to send. Especially as a Brit. Read any news lately?
Since it is Stanley Cup playoff season, just think, Department of Player Safety, things could always be worse. there was also a rest of a Catalan Grand Prix that played out. Aleix Espargaró looked like he was going to finish on the podium. Fabio Quartararo was so far ahead. The tower had said the final lap has started. The timing tower said the final lap started. Unfortunately, he hadn't. Aleix Espargaró still had two laps to go, and on the actual final lap, he slowed down thinking the race was over. He pulled up Mark Martin at Bristol in 94. While he was running second, he dropped to fifth, and he burst into tears as he returned to the paddock in embarrassment. We thought Aprilia had screwed this up.
We did. Oh,
it was on Aleix.
It was an escalator descent into how did this happen. Like, watching it live, we assumed he had a bike problem. But no, he started waving through the crowd and eventually accelerated when he realized his error. Then we assumed it was a pit board. Then he admitted himself, yes, I looked at the pylon and came to that conclusion myself.
Oh,
Aleix, you folks. Silly fucker.
was this a season-defining mistake from the man who has been Mr. Consistency all year long?
Oh, we're going to have to wait and see, because he just gave away 9 free points to the guy who won the race.
Mm-hmm. Fabio Quartararo now has a 22-point lead in the championship.
Oh, man.
No one else is within 2 races of Fabio in the championship right now. I can't believe I'm saying this. In June, Fabio's got one hand on the title already. Like, because Bastianini binned it again, which didn't help. And of course, Bagnaia was taken out in that Nakagami incident. So the two guys that were closest to him had donuts on the weekend. So Espargaró just gave him a gift. My God.
Where do we even start?
Good news is, don't remember the last time the championship's been decided by 9 points or less. Mm. Bad news is, if it is, you're going to feel real bad about it.
Oh, God. Look, I've become
oh,
chief.
Oh, God, it was 2015, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2015. That was decided by 5. I wrote about it. It was
comes
great.
Back to the kick.
Yeah, all roads lead to the kick, baby.
Kick brings you back.
Always available on Amazon and patreon.com/motorsport101. Ding, ding. Anyway, I was going to say, I have become the chief Aleix Espargaró defender on this platform because I think the internet is very mean to the man for seemingly no reason. Aleix, I can't defend you on this one, buddy. That was a catastrophic mistake. At worst, he finishes that race in third. He was in an intense fight before Game Martin for second. Aleix was winning that fight. He had about a 0.4 of a second lead going into that penultimate lap. And, he's lucky if he came back.
He's waving to the crowd. He's,
yeah.
He's slowing down. Oh, shit. People are just riding by him at full speed.
Yeah, and that's when he realized. I mean, look, in Aleix's defense, he's not the first man I've seen do this. This is not an unprecedented mistake. I remember this happened to Alex Rins. Yeah, that Alex Rins at Brno, back when he was in Moto3. I want to say back in 2015 or so, where he was, I think, running second, going over the line at Brno. He stands up and, raises his fists up in the air thinking he's won the race because it was a close photo over the line, or so he thought it was the final lap of the race. He thinks he's won. There was one lap to go, and I think he ended up in 15th place. It's not unthinkable that this has happened.
It's unthinkably stupid. Before,
but it doesn't make it any less stupid. And you've got to maintain your professionalism here. You've got a dash. You've got a pit board. It's there for a reason. Use it, for God's sake. It's there for good reason, and he's got no one to blame but himself. And look, I'm not going to be one of those journos that's going to call him an idiot, because I know certain people did. And because, you know what, anything I say about Aleix Espargaró here is not going to be as angry or as hateful as what he's probably told himself since then. So, you know, I'm not going to be too mean on the man for it, but oh dear God, like this, you know what this was? And I've nicknamed it before on this show. It was a Jacobellis moment. We had the premature celebration. I now have to rename it the Espargaro moment, because Jacobellis has won some golds now at the Olympics, and Aleix is not a world champion. So tough titty, boy. We've renamed it, folks. It's a bad one. Oh, dear.
We also had some silly season drama, and King, this goes
We get into that, before we get into that, just to make the point, someone actually did win this race. Fabio Quartararo beat the field with, he beat the field with a ham, just bludgeoning them.
All his clothes stayed on.
Like, you know what's funny? I was watching BT Sports coverage of this. They were adamant, right, that Fabio was struggling a bit. Frankie Morbidelli might come back this weekend. Spoiler alert, kids, he didn't. And, you know, it was going to be Ciccati's weekend to lose. Aleix Espargaró was going to dominate this race weekend. Fabio Quartararo seal-clubbed the field by 8.5 seconds.
Yeah, what, Fabio was a pole away from a grand slam?
Got that new contract.
And the new contract. He's confirmed the Yamaha for the next 2 years as well.
The Yamaha is so bad, he can't. He's coming back for more.
Apparently, because that bike is such a clunker. You know, I don't know. He wasn't going to go anywhere else in the first place. That was like the least surprising news here. But my God, that man can ride a motorcycle. Holy shit. Like, did people forget that he loves Catalunya? I think people forgot that he loves Catalunya, because that was...
He loves it so much, he'll take his clothes off for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My man beat the field over their knees like Bane. It was complete dominance. I know, it's not really a story in the context of what's gone on this weekend, but we had to mention that Fabio Quartararo was a weapon of mass destruction this weekend. He gave him what we call the super beat him down treatment. That was an unholy clobbering. And probably one hand on the title, because Aleix needs wins at this point, and everybody else is two races back. This is going to be a problem.
Basically. Yep. Big problem.
Big problem. Big problem. On the subject of big problems, KTM.
Oh, man. welcome to our tennis podcast, where we're going to talk about how Rafael Nadal dominated Roland Garros this weekend.
We're
also going to talk about Miguel Oliveira definitely being told by his bosses they don't want to keep him at KTM, but they're going to send him back to Tate 3, with rumors intensifying that Jack Miller could be heading over from Ducati. And Miguel Oliveira explicitly told everybody he does not want to go back to Tech 3. So, King, who are you taking? Jack Miller? Miguel Oliveira? Who are you fancying this?
Now, if you're on our Discord server, I said some choice words about Miguel Oliveira, which I will not repeat.
Ooh, I'm tempted. It's staring me in the face, but no, I will not sing it. Let's just say they weren't kind. And let's just say... It may have mentioned one of the members of his family.
Stick to the notes that are in the set.
So, my notes in the set list, I don't think Oliveira has a choice here. I don't think he can convince KTM to retain him at the factory team. And for him, to paraphrase Carl Benz, it's either Tech 3 or nothing.
Do not dare just... Okay, this is me saying this. Don't you dare disrespect the sanctity of the three-pointed star comparing them to KTM. This is me saying this. Good Lord. What does it come to?
This would be so much easier if Miguel Oliveira, to borrow a phrase from Ryan King, just passed some fucking bikes.
Well, what's he going to do? Go pass his teammate who has a long-term contract who also can't pass any bikes? Because the KTM is a dog shit bike?
Yep.
Yeah. This is
a problem. Talk about... you're trading... Look, if Jack Miller... God bless his soul, Jack Miller. You're trading one... Inconsistent. He was you know, after Pecco Bagnaia got knocked out, I couldn't tell there was another factory Ducati in the race. Really couldn't.
All the Gresinis, they both crashed too.
Well, we could tell because Bastianini's just crumpling up his title chance, yelling Kobe, and chucking it in the fucking trash.
Gatti, please make some fucking sense. I'm really tired of you guys every week not knowing what the fuck is going on in your factory.
And I'm just looking at it like KTM is here trading one inconsistent rider on an inconsistent bike for another inconsistent rider who is currently on an inconsistent bike.
He's so true.
This is the most lateral move they could have made.
Alex Rins is right there!
Oh, man. I don't think Alex Rins wants to go to KTM.
Espargaro could fall back into your lap.
I don't think they want Paul Espargaro. That man is cooked right now.
He was stone dead last of the bikes that made it over the line this past weekend.
After running fourth in early doors.
Yeah.
We've heard nothing as far as him having a technical problem or anything. He was just that slow.
Startlingly slow. How do I look at this? I look at this like Miguel Oliveira has definitely been inconsistent. There's no arguing that. But I've often said, is that down to the bike or the rider? Because everything in his track history that's gotten him to this point has said to me that Miguel Oliveira is an outstanding bike rider. Like he was.
He's got their only win this year.
Yeah. He was an incredible.
He's won a race for KTM this year.
Yeah, this year, like in the red, and he dominated that race. I mean, look, he was an excellent Moto 3 rider. He was an excellent Moto 2 rider. He has won four races for KTM since joining their outfit in some capacity, whether it was Tech 3 or with the full-blooded factory team. He has four wins for them. His upside is unbelievably good. I've said this from day one. I think he just needs a manufacturer that knows what he likes and can get the best out of him, because KTM is not that. I think he's better than what this is. I mean, talking about him potentially not being in the sport anymore is crazy. And I did see talk of him talking to Gresini during this weekend. So he might be the Bastianini replacement if he moves to the factory team next year. That'll be a good fit for him.
As weird as Ducati has been, I think he would be outstanding on a Ducati.
Oh, yeah. Like, look, just give him a capable bike. He has not let anyone down on capable machinery in his entire GP career, ever. Like, and even when it's been shit, he can still get it to win. And that is something. Look, how many guys in the top flight have more than four wins in the top flight so far in their careers? A handful.
And the thing is, like, by and large, wherever Brad Binder is, it's usually not. It's either behind or not far up the road from him.
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get why they're in such... I mean, I get it. They want to manage their resources. They probably want to chuck Fernandez out and keep Miggy on the board by spreading out the talent, by keeping him in Tech 3. They're going to have the Pedro Acosta problem to deal with soon as well.
Oh, yeah.
I say, you're bringing in an outsider when you've got a war chest of fantastic talent coming up through.
You have an 80-grade prospect just waiting in the wings there.
So why are we bringing in an outside rider who is probably being outperformed by Oliveira anyway, and Oliveira's on a worse bike? Because Jack Miller was unbelievably poor around Spain.
I don't understand Jack Miller at this point. Miller was fourth in this championship last year. Fourth. Like, he was really good last season. There is no argument here, right? He's had two or three rounds where he's just been absolutely dreadful. I don't understand Jack Miller at this point. Like, I don't understand anything about Jacani. I said this on Twitter because I did an impromptu Q&A on Twitter yesterday. I literally said with my own mouth that maybe Johan Zarco might be the guy that should be in the factory seat next year because you need a floor. Like, the floor is made of quicksand at the moment in Jacati.
No, the floor is in the gravel because Bastianini literally is win or crash at this point.
Yeah. You can't win a title that
way. Only wins or crashes. You have to do a whole fucking lot more winning than crashing if you want to win a title.
Yeah. Martin's binned it 5 times this year.
Martin's been abysmal this year. What's happened?
We just finished 2nd because, again, we know how good Martin can be. Like,
but it's like every Ducati rider that is fighting up there at the front is either podium or DNF.
There's question marks everywhere in that camp. Everywhere. There is not one stable rider talent in the Ducati outfit. Even Bagnaia has been inconsistent. Like, there is no one with a clean build at the moment in that factory outfit. So why the hell are you bringing in Jack Miller like he's going to fix this problem right now? I don't understand KTM right now.
You're shipping out Jack Miller. You're shipping out Jack Miller if you're Ducati, but you're replacing him with someone who is probably just as inconsistent, even if they might have a little more upside.
Like, does this improve Ducati right now?
I don't think this especially improves either manufacturer because they're just trading their problems for more of the same problems. Meanwhile, Mir and Rins are just sitting there. Menacingly.
Does anybody want to sign Alex Rins for next year? He's gonna end up at RNF, isn't he? He's gonna end up on an Aprilia. That's terrifying.
That might be a good thing for him.
Yeah, that might be
a private Aprilia might be falling upwards.
Blessing in the skies.
And Mir, I mean, at this point, he could ask Honda for $80 million a year and they'd have to pay him. They have no options.
Right, none whatsoever.
Just write him that check like he's interested, like he's debating on whether or not it's morally acceptable to go play in LIV golf. Phil Mickelson walking out to the red carpet gal like he's the Undertaker, trying to go 25 minutes, being gassed after 5.
Letting everyone know if LIV Golf offered us 7 figures to do a LIV Golf podcast, I think we could take it.
Oh, I quit seven the figures? Day job tomorrow. I don't even hesitate.
And I mean, and the other piece in all of this regarding, you know, Honda and everything, if you want to know how things are going with Paul Espargaro, they had the option to give the new development frame that Marquez was riding last week before he went in for his surgery. By the way, he was riding with a 30-degree rotated humerus and still had top 6 pace. What the hell?
Yep. And they gave it to Taka instead of Paul.
They gave it to Taka instead of their other factory rider, or Stefan Bradl, who, by the way, existed and crashed again because he's Stefan
Iker Lecuona's right there.
No, he isn't, because Honda, for once in their miserable existence, outside of Formula One, of course, their World Superbike program with Iker is actually looking pretty good this year.
Yeah.
Not great, but it's definitely better than it has been.
You could give him a wild card. You don't have to go back to Bradl all the time. You don't have to go back to this well that's already been dry.
Precisely.
Yes, it's Paul is so done in that town.
He
defined all the development on this bike, and this bike has, well,
no bitches.
This bike is terminally grassless.
Yeah, it's
it doesn't
it's
touch rough. Any grass, just gravel.
Yep, it's rough out here in these streets. Oh, what a wild 5 out of 10 race that was to review on this show. Because, my God, we have a lot to get through on that one. But, yeah, somebody get Alicia Spargaro his mans, and somebody get Alex Rins a new wrist. MotoGP will be back in a couple of weeks' time for the German Grand Prix. It's going to be the first time in a while I'm going to be saying this. The German Grand Prix will not be won by Marc Marquez. Yeah, that's going to be the first time I'm going to be saying that in 11 years.
We're saying that there's going to be some act of God and the race is going to be canceled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Mark Marquez is, like, going to win the race on foot.
Yeah. He's going to get one of Mark Cavendish's bicycles. He's going to win this race on foot
with a cast on his arm.
Yeah.
And, of course, with everything with Mark, get well soon.
Apparently, of course.
Surgery was a resounding success.
Great.
Everyone's pretty happy, so... The wait has begun.
Fingers crossed.
The return is brewing.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, indeed. Hopefully it all goes to plan because we miss you, Mark. It wasn't the same without you out there. Huge grandstand there for the Marquez stand with a big banner that said, "Come back stronger, Mark." Although, attendance was down. Only 60,000 for the Catalan Grand Prix this year.
Oh.
91,000 3 years ago, 60,000 now.
Maybe they're missing Valentino Rossi more than we think.
Maybe.
Out there in the stands, hate watching,
of course. We're just like us. Next episode will be Formula E in Jakarta. Actually, let's learn to pronounce. Actually, got to pronounce it correctly this time, sort of. But that'll be next up for Formula E. Mitch Brah! You'll love to see it. Before we go, of course, basically, you can find us one more time. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. Twitch.tv/ Motorsport101 _ Facebook.com/Motorsport101. Twitter @Motorsport_101. @Harrison101HD. @RJ O'Connell. @RyanEricKing. @CBuckley917. Our website, Motorsport101, for more on that race and IndyCar as well from Detroit. And of course, all the big reviews on there as well. Including written stuff from me as well. And of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101 for some early access and a bunch of other perks as well. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell, Ryan Eric King, and Cam Buckley. Until next time, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Guys, do we have one podcast left or two?
No, it's the one in Jakarta, you know, Jakarta. Like Magna Carta or Microsoft Encarta.
We gotta get this info into Alish stat.
BMW Quick. Motorrad World Endurance winners of the first 24 hours of Spa on bikes.
Beautiful.
You're all shocked.